Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nazir Daf Lamed Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin from the top, from 11 lines from the top of Daf Lamed Beis. Before we begin the actual shiur, just a brief announcement. We, in Gemara Markings, are delivering Daf Yomi Shiurim, and it appears at this point that today's shiur for Daf Lamed Beis will run into Daf Lamed Gimel, and it will continue till Daf Lamed Dalet Omid Aleph, where you'll see the end of the perek. You'll notice that Daf Lamed Gimel is a very unusual daf in the standard Vilna editions. It is a short Lamed Gimel Amid Aleph, and Lamed Gimel Amid Beis, by way of Gemara, doesn't even exist. It's a page full of Tosfosin from different places. In our Gemara Markings Shas Ozer edition, we attempted to provide those very Tosfosin in their respective proper locations. So, again, we mention that Lamed Beis will probably include Daf Lamed Gimel as well. The Gemara, as we mentioned, begins, today's shiur begins 11 lines from the top. The Dibur HaMaschil from the Gemara, Nishal L'Chachom V'Hitiru, a person had accepted Nazirus in a questionable fashion, and the individual had set aside sacrifices for the, or in anticipation at the end of his Nazirus, but he discovered through consultation with Torah sages that he never really accepted upon himself Nazirus. So the Mishnah told us that the animals that he set aside for Nazirus sacrifices that are customarily brought at the end of the Nazirus are free to go back to their herds and graze as chulin, as if nothing ever happened. This would call a type of Nazirus betois, a type of mistake, and hence the animals are not sanctified, or we can even say were never really sanctified. In our Mishnah, we had seen a discussion between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, which in effect was a continuation of the previous Mishnah, where Beis Shammai had indicated that Hegdish Betos is Chal, and Beis Hillel said Hegdish Betos is not Chal. The Mishnah that we had in our last Shir on Daf Lamed Aleph Omid Beis, Beis Hillel said to Beis Shammai, well, do you not see over here that Hegdish Betos is not binding from the fact that the animals that we just described go and grow back to their herds and graze? And Beis Shammai had a response from the topic of Meiser Behema. We discussed this in our last shiur. We continue now in the Gemara. Omar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Mide Beis Shammai Nishma Lide Beis Hillel. From the position of Beis Shammai, let us extrapolate to what Beis Hillel would hold. That will become clear as we go on. Lav Amri Beis Shammai, Hegdish Betos, Habe Hegdish. Is it not so that Beis Shammai had originally taken the position that sanctification that's imposed under, we'll say, mistaken circumstances, nevertheless is binding? We spent a lot of time in our previous shiur grappling with the word ta'os, but here we'll just translate it on a somewhat simplistic level. Is it not so that according to Beis Shammai, who had a, let's say, fundamentally held that if there's some type of, let's say, haziness or or element of mistake in the initial sanctification, it nevertheless was binding. Kevan digloy milsa delav shapir nozar teitse v'tira be'eder. However, when it became readily obvious retroactively that the Nazirus that he had accepted was not an effective acceptance, teitse v'tira be'eder, the animal goes out free to graze in the herd as if it was never sanctified. So Beis Shammai represents a position that gives heed, significance to sanctification even under mistaken circumstances. But nevertheless, when retroactively you see that there was no Nazirus, there is no sanctification regarding the animals that he had set aside. Well, Le Beis Hillel Nami, by the same token, with regard to Beis Hillel, can we not conclude, Afal Gav the Amri, Tamura Betois Havya Tamura, even though they acknowledge that Tamura, when done, we spoke about Tamura quite extensively in our previous year, so we're not going to go over it again, but the topic of Tamura involves the attempt to replicate sanctity that exists on one animal onto another chulin animal. When done under, say, unintended or mistaken type circumstances, it nevertheless takes hold. Hani mili, this is qualified. Hecha di'isei le'ikur hegdish. That is where the original sanctified animal exists as a sanctified animal. Avol hecha demis akir iker hegdish, where the original animal sanctity has been uprooted, has been canceled for whatever reason. Is akir nami tmura, the animal that was replicated from that is also undone, is also uprooted, and it wouldn't be offered as a sacrifice. We continue with a quote from our Mishnah, Omar Mar, Iatem Moidim She'ilu Koro Lechi Asiri. There's a very technical point that's mentioned in the Rashi. The term Omar Mar, oftentimes, or throughout the Shas, you see this term used as a quote from something that had been mentioned earlier in the course of the discussion, but you'll never find it as a reference to the original Mishnah that appeared in that particular section. But this Maseches Nozir, is unusual. The language throughout the Masechta, you have noticed, is not the standard form. And hence, even the expression Omar Mar is used, I'll say, out of character. Here we're simply quoting from our Mishnah. So our Mishnah said, Iatem Moidim She'ilu Korol She'asir V'chulei. We saw in the Mishnah a discussion concerning Meiser Behema, which is, generally speaking, the 10th animal in a counting of animals, of those animals born in one's flock or one's herd any given year. So he counts the animals 1, 2, 3 of the new births of that year. Number 10 becomes sanctified. And we saw in the Mishnah that if he proclaimed the 9th animal as a number 10 or the 11th animal as a number 10, they also become sanctified. This isn't the Masechta to get into all of the details of that topic, but nevertheless, we saw that point in the Mishnah. Itmar, Meiser. When it comes to this, we'll say mistaken proclamation or designation of the 9th animal or the 11th animal. Rav Nachman Omar Ta'uso Velo Kavonoso. Namely, that sanctification sets in only if he was mistaken. He thought that the 9th animal was the 10th and he called it 10. Or the 11th animal came out and he thought it was the 10th animal and called it 10. Then the Torah has a provision for it becoming sanctified. But only ta'uso, lo kavanos, without intent. Rav Chisto v'Rabo bar Rav Huno Amri Ta'usa v'chol shegein kavanoso. They say that if the sanctity takes hold under mistaken circumstances, then certainly the Meiser Behema sanctity can take hold if you had intent for it. As we go on in the Gemara, there's going to be a give and take, not an extensive give and take, but we've marked it all the same with the volcano shape appearing as in one direction and then later flipping over to highlight the give and take aspect of the Gemara. So Rava raises a question. Omar le Rava le Rav Nachman. Lididcha di amris ta'uso velo kavanoso. According to your approach, that Meister Behema, which, by the way, appeared, we mentioned in our Mishnah, brought in by Beis Shammai, who was trying to advance their case that Hegdish Betois takes hold. According to you, Rav Nachman, that said that it takes hold if there is a mistake but there is no intent. De Ko'amri Beis Shammai le Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai, who addressed Beis Hillel in order to make their point that Hegdish Betos is Hegdish, they said, I atem moidim, Beis Shammai said to Beis Hillel, who was who differed with that, with Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai said, I atem moidim shilu kor l'chi asiri asiri chi ulachadosor asiri sheshloshton mekudoshin. Is it not so that if you call the ninth 10, and the 10th animal you called it 9, and the 11th animal you called 10, that all three are sanctified? The ishtiku Beis Hillel, and Beis Hillel remained silent. Well, Rava says, according to you, Rav Nachman, lemru lehon, let Beis Hillel respond to Beis Shammai by saying, ma la meiser shekein eino kadosh bekavona. How can you prove from Meiser Behema that Hegdish Betos takes hold when Meiser Behema does not take hold in the, we'll call it the messed up fashion, if he had intent? Could you say the same thing by Hegdish, where its entire Kedusha is only with intent? The basis of sanctity is where you intend to sanctify something. Meiser Behema, its whole ability to latch on to the ninth animal and the 11th animal is only where, according to you, Rav Nachman, is only where you have no intent. So you can't prove your point from Meiser Behema, whose whole power of, we'll say, extended sanctification is only when there is mistake, and use that to prove the realm of Hegdish, whose sanctity is only when there is actual intent. Omar Rav Simi Bar Ashi. Rav Simi Bar Ashi responds, and he says that Rav Nachman's point can still be accepted, that Meiser Behema will extend to the ninth animal and the 11th animal only if there is mistake and no intent. And if you'll ask, then why didn't Beis Hillel respond to Beis Shammai? The answer to that is going to be that would only strengthen the case of Beis Shammai. Hainu taimo dolo amri lahon. The following is the reason that Beis Hillel did not respond thusly to Beis Shammai, because that would only invigorate, strengthen Beis Shammai's position. The kal v'chomer hu, because Beis Shammai would then be able to construct the following kal v'chomer. Ma meiser she'eno kadosh bekavona, kadosh betos, mind you, meiser behema, which, as Rav Nachman says, doesn't become sanctified if there's intent, but does become sanctified where there is mistake. Hekdish shekadosh bekavona lo kol shekain. Hekdish, standard sanctification of other sacrifices, which does become holy, takes hold when there is intent, all the more so would it take hold if there is mistake. Exactly, Beis Shammai's position. However, velohi, Rav Simi Barashi himself, he continues and says that this Kal v'chomer is not something that Beis Shammai would really have said back to Beis Hillel. It seems that Rav Simi Barashi is, on the one hand, he's preserving Rav Nachman's case by saying that Beis Shammai would have argued thusly. However, at the heart of things, it's not really a Kal v'chomer. Why? The Hegdish Bedaita de More Toli. Literally, sanctification is dependent on the owner's intention. Let's take a look at Rashi. Velohi. We see Rashi toward the end of the page, five lines from the bottom, at the end of line, Velohi. The high Kal v'chomer lo motzin mahadilu Beis Shammai the Beis Hillel. The Kal v'chomer that was just suggested, Beis Shammai wouldn't have said to Beis Hillel, the hegdish bedaiti demore toli. She'eno kadosh elo bekavono l'das bailim v'lo betos bailim. Hegdish is dependent on the intent of the owner, not the mistake of the owner. Avol meiser bechushbina toli. Meiser behema is dependent on calculation, on the counting. So its sanctification is a result simply of a counting process where the animals are led through a narrow passageway and the owner stands over them with a rod in hand, counting 1, 2, 3, 4. And when he gets number 10, that's when sanctification takes place. So Meiser Behema, which is totally in Cheshbon, Kadosh Betos, it can become sanctified through mistake. Ule'olam emoloch, and I will tell you that midelo mahadri lehu Beis Hillel leBeis Shammai, from the fact that Beis Hillel did not say back to Beis Shammai, ma leMeiser shekein eino bekavona, how can you learn from Meiser, which is not something dependent on intent? De'is lehu leBeis Hillel. Beis Hillel holds from the fact they didn't say that. They hold the Ta'uso for Kol Shekein Kavanoso for Kashi L'Rav Nachman. They hold that the mistake takes hold, and certainly if there was intent, which would be unlike Rav Nachman. It might be noteworthy that this conclusion of Rashi for Kashi L'Rav Nachman is something that the Tosfos disagrees with. You can see the point made in Tosfos on the facing Tosfos page. Let's go over the Tosfos together. The bottom Tosfos, Omer of Simi Barashi, Ma Delo Amri Lahon Beis Hillel Oisa Tshuva. That which Beis Hillel did not respond, the suggested response, Dimkein Havi Amri Lahon Beis Shammai LeBeis Hillel. If anything, that would have strengthened Beis Shammai's position. Uma Meiser Sheinu Kadosh Kamo Hegdish Lios Kadosh Bekavona Afilu Hachi Chal Betois Meiser Behema takes effect if you didn't have Kavona, but if there was mistake, it would take hold. Hegdish lo kol shekein. Hegdish then all the more so would take hold if there is a mistake. Velohi. But that is not really true. Hegdish bedaita demore talia. Kol zeh midivrei Rav Simi. This point in the Tosfos is the basis of the way we marked the Gemara, indicating that all of this was part of his response. Klomar, ein ze kal v'chomer toiv lekapeach Beis Hillel. the suggested Kal Vachomer wouldn't be strong enough to cut down, to rebuff or refute Beis Hillel. Devadai Hegdish Bidas Ubekavonas Habaylim. Hegdish certainly is dependent on intent when it comes to standard sanctification of other types of sacrifices. The Pasuk says, a man, when he sanctifies items, midas ubekavonoso, it takes hold when, you see the term ish, it means when he's aware of his faculties. He is of sound mind. Therefore, when it comes to other cases of sanctification, a mistake would not be the basis of the imposition of sanctification. O Meiser Migzeres HaKosuv, Meiser Behema is effective in, let's say, in taking hold even on 9 or 11 by virtue of a scriptural ruling. Kamo Shemarim Beis Hillel Ponim B'Mishnosenu Miyud Beizu Shmini, from the way Beis Hillel in the Mishnah proved that the 8th animal or the 12th animal would not be sanctified even if he made a mistake concerning them. V'lo koshe l'Rav Nachmon Amai lo heshivu Beis Hillel Minei Ubei, and there isn't any problem for Rav Nachmon in Beis Hillel's silence. Rava has suggested, if you are correct, then Beis Hillel would have responded from the topic of Meiser Behema itself. But Tosis is pointing out that that non-response on the part of Beis Hillel doesn't represent a kasha, a difficulty for Rav Nachman. It could be that Beis Hillel's response to Beis Shammai was one of two options that they had. And in fact, Rav Nachman's suggested a Rava response would have been something they could have said as well. And as we saw at the end of Rav Simi's point, that Beis Shammai's supposed response to that wouldn't have been made to begin with. Let us now turn back to the text. We are at a new Mishnah. On the side, we have a topic heading, which reads, Mi shenodar benozir, umotso shebehemto nignava. A person had vowed to accept Nazirus and discovered that the animal that he set aside for sacrificial purposes was stolen. What we have to analyze is, when did the theft take place? Did it take place before he accepted Nazirus? And if so, the Nazirus was based on the false assumption that he had the animal. Or did the Nazirus that he accepted take place prior to the theft? And at the time that he accepted the Nazirus, it was well-founded, based on an animal that he, in fact, had in his possession at the time. So we continue in the text. The Mishnah, Misha Nodar Ben Nozir V'Holach L'Hovies Behemto, a person who had vowed to be a Nozir, he went to fetch the animals that he had set aside for the sacrificial offerings at the end of Nazirus, and discovered that the animal was stolen. Im ad shelo nignava behemto nozar, hare ze nozir. If prior to the theft he had accepted Nazirus, in other words, first he accepted Nazirus, and after that the unfortunate theft took place, he is a Nozir, even though right now he doesn't have an animal. You'll ask, well, couldn't he use this as the basis of absolving his vow? So Rashi explains he couldn't use this event as the basis of vow absolution, namely going to a sage and saying to him, had I known that after I accepted Nazirus, my animal would be stolen, so I would never have accepted the Nazirus. Why is that not a legitimate basis for vow absolution? So there's a concept that you see elsewhere in the Shas, especially in Maseches Nedarim, a concept called Ein Poischin La'Adam B'Noilad. This phrase you can see at the very end of the Rashi on this page, that Nolad means events that were not yet present. No, it literally means born. They were not yet born. Events that had not yet taken place at the time of the initial vow. So that things that happen later on, after the initial vow, cannot be used as the basis of vow absolution. So the Mishnah rules that if the theft had taken place only after he accepted the Nazirus, he still is a Nazir. And he'll have to bring his sacrifices from some other funds. We continue at the top of Amud Beis. V'im mishenignivo behemto nozar eino nozir. If, however, only after the theft did he accept Nazirus, thinking that he had those animals, then he is not a Nazir. His Nazirus was made on the assumption that he had these animals for him to eventually bring his sacrifices. Vizu tois to nochem amodi kisheolu nazir min hagoyel matzah beis hamikdash chorev. This was a point of error on the part of Nochem HaModi. When we say this was a point of error, he thought that you can absolve vows based on Nolad, based on events that took place after the initial vowing. Nochem HaModi lived at the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, that time period. There were people that had vowed to be Nazirim, and as such, and they vowed outside of Israel, they were unaware of what was taking place in the land of Israel, and they vowed to become Nazirim, and after their Nazirus, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And as the Mishnah goes on to say, Nochem HaModi absolved them of their Nazirus vow. So the Mishnah, to read again, had said, this is the point of mistake. Zu tois to Nochem HaModi kisha'olu Nazirim min ha'goyla. When the Nazirim came to Israel, came to Eretz Yisrael, came to Yerushalayim, from the diaspora, umotsu Beis HaMikdash Chorev, and they found the Beis HaMikdash to be destroyed. And here's the main point: it was destroyed, but it was destroyed after they had accepted their Nazirus. Amar lahem Nochem HaModi. Nochem said to this group of Nazirim, "Ilu hayisem yodim she Beis HaMikdash Chorev hayisem Nazirim. Had you known that the Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed when you vowed?" Now you came here and you see it destroyed. So would you have made the vow of Nazirus knowing that the Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed? Omer lo lo. So no, we wouldn't have vowed thusly. V'hetira Nochem HaModi. And Nochem HaModi absolved them of their Nazirus. Ukshebo hadover etzel chachomim, when this matter came to the attention of the other sages, Omer lo, they said to him, "Kol shenozar, anyone who accepted the vow of Nazirus, ad shelo chorav beis hamikdash, nazir. If the acceptance of the vow was before the actual destruction of the holy temple of the Beis HaMikdash, they are bound by the Nazirus vow. Regarding people like that, the churban, the destruction, would have been called nolad." Beis HaMikdash, people who vowed to become Nazirim after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Eino Nazir. They are not bound. They had accepted Nazirus on the assumption that the Beis HaMikdash was still around, and it was discovered that it wasn't around at the time they had vowed. That, as we've mentioned, is a legitimate basis for vow absolution. Omar Rabbah. Shotfuhu Rabbanan the Rabbi Eliezer, the Ukmei Beshita Sayhu. The Rabbah is making reference to a controversy between Rabbi Lozer and the Chachomim found in Maseches Nedorim concerning this very topic of using Nolad, the as yet, as yet unborn events as the basis of vow absolution. So they had a controversy in Maseches Nedarim. Maseches Nedarim precedes Maseches Nozir. There's, as we learned at the beginning of this Masechta, there's an order to the Masechtas. In fact, it's an order that seems to be very, very authentic, very original, in so far as this is the order in which they actually learn the topics. They learn Maseches Ksubos, followed by Maseches Nedarim, followed by Maseches Nozir. So there was a controversy between Rebbe Lozer and the Chachamim when they were studying the Masech that we call Maseches Nedarim. When it came to Maseches Nozir, Rabbo tells us that the Rabbonin who had been arguing with Rebbe Lozer, they swept Rebbe Lozer away from his original Shita and established him, convinced him to hold like they hold. What was Rebbe Lozer's original position? That you can use the unborn circumstances, the as yet say the we'll call the future circumstances as the basis of vow absolution. The Chachamim said you can't do that. So Rabbo says, let's read the words again. Shotfuhu. Shotfuhu means they washed him away from his Shotfu Rabbonan. The Rabbonan swept away Rebbe Lezer, Le Rebbe Lezer, V'ukme, and set him up, B'shitosayu, in their position. Disnan. And here we have the background for what Rebbe Lezer's original position was. Poschin Benola Divrei Rebbe Lezer. Poschin is the effort on the part of a sage to absolve one of his vows. So he can, you can use Nolad, the unborn circumstances at the time of the vow, as the basis for vow absolution. The sage would say to the individual, had you known at the time of your vow that these disturbing circumstances would take place, sometime later would you have made your vow? And if the person says, no, I wouldn't have made the vow, Rebbe Lozer in Maseches Nedarim says you can rely on that for vow absolution. The Chachamim Chosom say, no, you can't rely on as yet unborn circumstances. However, here in Maseches Nozir, Rebbe Lozer does not argue with the Chachamim. You see, in our Mishnah, no Rebbe Lozer response. In other words, he has accepted the Chachamim's objection to using Nolad as the basis of absolution. The Omar Rava, Afalgav, the Omar Rabbonan, Ein Poischin B'Nolad. Even though you cannot use as the basis of vow absolution Nolad, meaning direct reference to those circumstances that transpired only after the vow, Avol poischin b'tnayin nolad. This is an expression that we don't necessarily have to translate, but appreciate it through an example. And the Gemara proceeds to give us that example. We're going to cite the issue of temple destruction, Churban HaBayis, as the example here. And even for those who had vowed the Nazirus vow prior to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, we can absolve them of their vow through Tnai Nolad. Hey Chidomi, what do you mean by that? Amri Lahon, we would address these people who had vowed before the Churban HaBayis and ask them, Ilu Oso Inish, the Omar Lachon, the Chorav Beis HaMikdash. Mi have a Nadrisun? If someone would have come and told you, would have told you at the time that you vowed and given you counsel and said, you know, the Beis HaMikdash might be destroyed before the end of your Nazirus, would you have vowed? That type of, we'll say, a presentation to the Nazir who vowed before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, that would be an acceptable basis for his expression of regret. Take a look at the Tosfos on the facing Tosfos page. Avol Poisim, the second Tosfos that you see there. Avol Poisim b'tnai nola, de'amrinan luhu, ilu osa inish v'omar lechon, de'chorav beis hamikdash me'aveh, nozah u'pirish. Ilu bo ben adam elecho, b'shosh nadarta. If a man would have come to you at the time that you vowed, v'oymiatzcho, and would have counseled you, ki ulai chorav beis hamikdash, terem kolois nezirusecho, that the Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed before the end of your Nazirus, klum nodarta, which you have vowed, v'zeh doime lecharota, this is similar to an expression of regret, which you have in the following example, ilu bo asor b'nei odem shifaisucho mi nodarta, a person who vowed some kind of vow out of wrath, and the individual is asked, would you have vowed had 10 people come in your state of wrath and appeased you? And he would say, no, if I would have had that appeasing, I wouldn't have vowed. She'ein l'chalek me'ezetam yapius. There's no distinction based on the reason for the pius. Shafil tam apius. The pius is the appeasement. Even if the reason for the appeasement, Mishum Dovar Nolad, would have been because of events that had not yet transpired, Ein Bekach Klum, Davei Charota, it still constitutes acceptable regret, which can serve as the basis of vow absolution. So to phrase the absolution strictly based on the event that had not yet transpired, so we say that's not legitimate. But to base the absolution on what is termed by the Gemara Tanai Nolad, circumstances that are related to the as yet unborn circumstances, that could have been the basis of vow absolution. So in our case, if the person who had vowed before the destruction of the temple was asked, would you have vowed knowing, would you have vowed if someone had come along and given you advice that the Beis HaMikdash might be destroyed, and he would say, oh, had someone come along like that, I certainly would not have vowed. I regret having made a vow. Then we can absolve him of the Nazirus. We continue in the Gemara. Omar Rav Yosef. E havoi hasam. Now, let's point out that Rav Yosef is not coming along to absolve the people with Nocham Amodi of their vow. Quite to the contrary, he is chastising them. Rav Yosef says, if I was there, Hava Amino Lahon, I would have chastised them, I would have said to them, how could you have taken a vow at the time that you did? Hok Siv, there's a posuk in Yirmio which prophesizes the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. It says there, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem, Heimo. There's three references to the sanctuary of the Almighty. Zeh Mikdash Rishon U'Mikdash Sheni. This pasuk is describing a first temple. When Yirmiyo lived, the first Beis HaMikdash was around and was destroyed in his time. So when you make reference to a first, second, and third temples, so if there's going to be a third temple, that means that the first and second one will be destroyed. So Rav Yosef says that why would you have vowed knowing that the second Beis HaMikdash upon whom you were relying, upon whose existence you were relying to bring your nazir sacrifices would be destroyed? So the Gemara responds to Rav Yosef and says, Nihi diadin lo di akruv. Granted, people knew that the temple would be destroyed. Mi yad lo yidin lemosai. Did they know when? Omar Abaye velo yadin lemosai. You think people didn't know? For Hoksiv, there's a pasuk in Daniel, and it says there, Shavuim shivim nechtach al amcha v'al ir kochecha. Now, Shavuim shivim means 70 shmitas. A Shemitah is a period of 7 years. 7 times 70, or 70 times 7, is 490. From the point of destruction of the first temple, 490 years will lapse, and the second temple will be destroyed. So people knew about the limited, we'll say, life expectancy of that second Beis HaMikdash. The number 490 accounts for the 70 years of Babylonian exile and 420 years of Beis HaMikdash Hasheni, second Beis HaMikdash. So Rav Yosef's claim or chastisement is in order. The Gemara responds, however, Vakati, but still miyad inon beheyoma. Did they know on which day it would be destroyed? So, as Tosfos says on the facing Tosfos page, the second to last Tosfos, Dibur Maso Nehi, toward the end of the Tosfos, when the Gemara here says, granted they knew that it would be destroyed 490 years later, did they know Behe Yoma? And Tosfos says, I'm reading from the end of that Tosfos, Kloimar, Betchilas Shana, O Bem Tseosa, O Besofa, would the destruction be in that year 490? Would it be at the beginning of that year, or the middle, or the end? Usvurim Heim, Sheikhle, Nazirus, Viaviu, Karbonois, Kaidim Lachem, they innocently accepted Nazirus, thinking that they would have enough time to complete their Nazirus and bring the sacrifices before that destruction. So the end of the Gemara leaves you with the feeling or the questioning Rav Yosef's chastising of those people. The Mishnah. On the side, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, Kabbalas Nazirus, acceptance of Nazirus, al smach tnai she'eino borer, with a condition that is not clear. And in fact, the Mishnah that we're about to read is a Mishnah that we have seen quoted in the past, in the recent past. Hoyu mahalchin baderech, group of people were walking on their way, ve'echot bo kenegdon, and a man came opposite them in their direction from the distance. Omar Echoman, one of the people of this group, said, Harini Nozir Shizeh Ploni, I'll be a Nozir if it is so and so. The Echod Omar, the second fellow, says, Harini Nozir Shein Zeh Ploni, I'll be a Nozir if it's not that guy. And Harini Nozir She Echod Mikem Nozir, a third person says, I'll be a Nozir if one of you two will be a Nozir. Well, one of those two certainly will be a Nazir, so this third guy will be a Nazir. A fourth guy says, She'ein echad mikem Nazir. I'll be a Nazir if neither one of you are Nazirim. Fifth guy says, She'shnechem Nazirim. I'll be a Nazir if both of you are Nazirim. And the sixth guy says, well, I'll be a Nazir She'kulchem Nazirim, if you're all Nazirim. Beishamai omrim kula Nazirim. Beishamai says, they are all bound by Nazirus. even though you can see that on a literal basis, they can't all be Nazirim. That fellow coming from distance can't both, yes, be that fellow and not be that guy at the same time. But Beis Shammai says they all are Nazirim. They all really had intention to become Nazirim anyway. Beis Hillel Omrim, Eino Nazir Elami Shelo Niskaimu Dvarav. Now this line is difficult. The Gemara will refer to it. The simple translation is that only he whose words were not fulfilled will be a Nazir. And if anything, the opposite should be the case. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Ein Echod Mehem Nazir. None of them are Nazirim. Rabbi Tarfon's position is explained in Rashi. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Ein Echod Mehem Nazir. Rashi says, Shelo Nitna Nazirus Elo Lahafla. Nazirus is binding only when it's hafla. What does hafla mean? Shehei mevarer dvorov. The initial acceptance is with clarity. V'yomar hareini nazir. V'lo yehei toile nazirus b'dover acher. Without making his nazirus dependent on something else. Certainly, if he's making his nazirus dependent on something that's not clear at the time of the nazirus. The pasuk uses the word yafli, ishki yafli lindor neder lohazir nozir lashem. And the word yafli, hafla'a, means clear speech. The Mishnah continues, hirti'a la'achorov, the fellow who is coming from the distance who is going to be the basis of the their nazirus, he then receded, and it never becomes clear whether it was the guy they thought it would be or not. So the Tanakhama says, Eino Nazir. There is no Nazirus. And this is explained by Rashi, Sofek Nazirus Lahakya. Where there's a doubt concerning the Nazirus, it does not take hold. Reb Shimon Omer. Now Reb Shimon is of the opinion that when there is a doubt, you take the stringent opinion, namely Sofek Nazirus Lahachmir. And in order to get yourself out of this problem, Yomar. In other words, according to Reb Shimon, if you never discover who the guy was, you're going to have to observe Nazirus. The question is, how do you get out? How do you conclude the Nazirus? So Reb Shimon says, Yomar, say as follows, Im hoyo kidvorai hareini nozir chova. If that guy, let me point out, and when we before we go on, that when we speak about how does he get out of the Nazirus, look, his acceptance was based on the identity of that fellow, which we never discover. So is this guy a Nazir or not? Well, we don't know. So we say, well, observe the Nazirus restrictions anyway. However, when it comes to the bringing of the sacrifices, if you were technically not a Nazir because the guy that you thought it was, who you never discovered his real identity, turned out to be not the fellow you anticipated, so you were never really a Nazir. How in the world are you able, how would you bring the sacrifices that conclude the Nazirus? If you were in reality never a Nazir, you can't bring sacrifices that are unwarranted into the Beis HaMikdash. So what do? So Reb Shimon suggests the following. You say, Im hoyo kidvorai, if that fellow whose identity we didn't discover really was the fellow I thought it was, hareini nazir chova, then the nazirus that I am to observe is the nazir, the nazirus of obligation. V'im lav, if the guy that we never discovered really wasn't the fellow I thought he was, then hareini nazir nedav, I'll be a nazir anyway, a voluntary nazirus. And as such, so he's a Nazir, he's definitely a Nazir either way. At the end of his Nazirus observance, he will then bring the sacrifices and have his hair cut and be released from the Nazirus restrictions. Referring to the phrase in the Mishnah that appeared problematic, Beis Hillel had said that Eino Nazir Elo Mi Shelo Niskaimu Dvarav. So the Gemara says, and we have arrows to the side of more text enabling you to see what we're referring to. Mi shelo niskaimu dvarav amai havi nazir. He whose conditions were not met why should he be a nazir? If a person accepted upon himself nazirus based on a condition, so if the condition is met, so that binds him to the nazirus. If his condition is not met, why would he be bound? So we have a couple approaches in order to understand that line. Number one, Omer of Yehuda. And we should point out on the side, simply under the nose say, the topic heading, we have Shnei Hezberim, Ahadik Otani Beis Hillel, Oimrim, Eino, Nozir Elami, Shalon is Kaimu Dvarov. So Rav Yehuda takes the simple approach and says, Omer of Yehuda, Eimo, Mishen is Kaimu Dvarov. He whose conditions were met. So he's changing the, we'll say, the text of the Mishnah to, we'll say, make more sense. At this point, we continue on to Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph. Number two, Abaye Omar, Kagon di Omar, the fellow in our Mishnah is saying, Inami lav plonihu ahave nami nozir. Meaning, even if it turns out to be someone else, it's not the person, even if it turns out to be a person other than the one I specified, I will be a nozir anyway. Umay lo niskaimu dvarav. According to Abaye, who is trying to preserve the original text of the Mishnah, what is meant by he whose conditions were not met? After all, now, according to your expanded version of the Mishnah, he's saying, I'll be a nazir anyway. So, Gemara explains, Lo niskaimu dvarav harishonim, ela dvarav achronim. He whose original words were not fulfilled, he who said, I'll be a nazir if so-and-so is Bill. And even if it's not Bill, I'll still be a nazir. So his original statement was, I'll be a nazir if it turns out, if so-and-so turns out to be Bill. If you prefer, David. That was his initial statement. And when the Mishnah says, Lo niskaimu dvarav, it simply means, he whose original words were not fulfilled, Elo dvarav achronim, but his latter words were fulfilled, it will be a nazir. So in our example, he said, I'm going to be a nazir if so-and-so coming from the distance turns out to be David. And then he continues saying, and even if it's not David, I'll still be a nazir. So when it turns out to be not David, he'll be a nazir anyway. But his original condition, namely that I'll be a nazir if it is David, that was not fulfilled. The Mishnah mentioned that if the person from the distance receded and we never discovered his identity, so the Tanakama said, well, you're not a Nazir because Sofek Nazirus Lahokel. Taimo Mishum Dihirtia Lachorov. The reason that there is no Nazirus is because he receded and his identity was never discovered. Ha Asi Likamon Habe Nazir. However, had he come forward to us and we could identify him, so then you would be obligated to observe the Nazirus. If you said, I'll be a Nazir if so-and-so is David, and he comes forward and it turns out to be David, you'll be bound. Money. We're asking, who is the author of our Mishnah? Our Mishnah said that if he receded and never came forward, you're not a Nazir. But if he did come forward and you could identify him, he will be a Nazir. Even though at the time of the Nazirus vow, at the time you accepted the Nazirus, you didn't know for sure, you did not have clarity who it was. So, as we mentioned earlier, you have a situation where you lack half law. You lack, at the time of the vowing, clear speech. Nevertheless, you'll end up being a nazir. Money, who holds that position? Notice the very rare occurrence now. There's no Lamed Gimel Omid Beis. We continue till the top of Lamed Dalet Omid Aleph. In order to figure this out, we have a couple of stages of Gemara. Eleimo Rebbe Tarfon. The triangles represent the stages to figure out who the author is. If you were to think that the author of the Mishnah that said here, Tio Achor Veino Nozir, would be Rabbi Tarfon, well, Mi Havi Nozir? Would he become a Nozir even if the fellow does show up and it turns out to match the conditions that I stated? Kevon de Beshaita de Konozar lo yoda iploni hu vi lo. According to Rabbi Tarfon, since at the time of the vowing, you didn't know if it was so-and-so or not, mi cholo le nazirus, would the nazirus take hold? And then we emphasize, even if it turns out later to be the one you thought, the hatanya, Rabbi Yehuda omer, mishum Rabbi Tarfon, ein echod mehem nazir lefi shelo nitno nazirus elo lahafla. This is a rather abbreviated quote, but this is a reference to all those fellows in the Mishnah, the people walking along, referring to so-and-so in the distance. Rabbi Tarfon says none of them are a Nazir. Why? Because at the time they accepted the Nazirus, the identity of the fellow in the distance was not known, was unclear. So Rabbi Tarfon cannot be the author of our Mishnah. Elo Rabbi Yehuda Decree who? Our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda of Kri. Kri is a reference to the example that we see right now in this Brisa, Desanya. And this is also something we've learned in the past. Hareini Nozir Amanashe Bekri Hazeh Meakur. A person accepts the vow of Nazirus on condition that in this pile of grain, it turns out that there are 100 kur. Kur is a dry measure. And he accepts Nazirus, assuming that after measuring the kri, after measuring the pile, there is 100 kur. V'holach u'motzoi she nignav o shovad. And he goes to the pile and discovers that it's stolen or it's lost, the wind blew it all away. So you never really discover whether or not there would be 100 kur. So it never became known. Rabbi Shimon Oser, Rabbi Shimon says, you have to observe Nazirus anyway. Take the strict approach. Rabbi Shimon, of course, holding that Sofek Nazirus Lachmir. Rabbi Yehuda Matir. Rabbi Yehuda says that in this case, where the amount is never discovered, you're not bound. Parallel that for a moment to the guy coming from the distance who actually recedes, who never comes forward, so you never discover his identity. And our Mishnah, the Tanakhama said, you're not bound. That corresponds to Rabbi Yehuda. And similarly, in the case of the pile of grain, let's say the pile of grain didn't get blown away, and you ended up counting, measuring it, and found that there was 100 kor. What would Rabbi Yehuda say? Rabbi Yehuda say, you will be a Nazir, even though at the time you accepted the Nazirus, you did not know. So that is exactly what our Mishnah taught. Just to review what our Mishnah said, I'll be a Nazir if so-and-so is David. Fellow from the distance recedes, I never discover who it is. So Tanakhama says, you're not bound. If the fellow from the distance would have come forward and we would discover that it's David, you will be bound. Author, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda of Kri, that's the source that we just read. Rabbi Shimon, and we have a long point. As you can see, it's marked accordingly. Rabbi Shimon Savar, Kevon de'ilu lo nignav dilma havu bei meakur v'havi nazir. Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that that pile of grain, had it not been stolen, there may very well have been 100 kor in the pile. And had there been 100 kor, you would have been a Nazir. Hashtonami havi Nazir. You now, even if it is stolen, are obligated to observe Nazirus. the Hochanami, so too in our case of the fellow coming from the distance, Kevon di e also the Kamon viadinon de ploni havoi havi nozir, had the fellow coming from the distance come forward and met up with us and we would discover his identity as being the very person upon whom we based our nazirus, Hashtanami, now too that he hasn't come forward, havi nozir, you are bound as well. That is a description of Rav Shimon, paralleling the case in our Mishnah to the case of the stolen pile of grain. We continue with a new Mishnah. Before we do so, on the side, we have a topic heading, Hamakabel Nazirus al Yedei Tnai, acceptance of Nazirus based on a condition, Be'inyan Hagdoras Koi, based on establishing the halachic category of a creature known as a koi. There are different commentaries as to what a koi is. We don't have to mention those opinions. You'll notice that the commentaries here don't get into that level of background, but what is of interest to us is this koi creature. It's a kosher variety animal. It has the split hooves and it chews its cud, so that's not an issue. However, is it a behemoth or is it a chaya? This creature, is it considered a domesticated variety animal or is it considered a chaya? A chaya is that category of animals that lives in the wild. There are many nafkaminas. There are practical points of difference, halachically speaking. If an animal is a behemoth, so when you slaughter it, the blood that falls to the floor does not need to be covered in dirt. A chaya, when it is slaughtered, so the mitzvah of kisui hadam applies. There's also another nafkamina concerning the chaylev. The chaylev are forbidden fats in an animal from different sections of the animal. That restriction applies to a behemoth. It does not apply to a chaya. With that general background in mind, we now proceed with the Mishnah. Ro es hakoi v'al my person sees a koi creature and says, Hareini nozir shezeh chaya. I'll be a nozir if this is a chaya, the undomesticated variety. Hareini nozir shezeh eino chaya. I'll be a nozir if it's not a chaya. Hareini nozir shezeh behema. Hareini nozir she'ein zeh behema. Hareini nozir shezeh chaya ubehema. Hareini nozir she'ein zeh lo chaya v'lo behema. Hareini nozir, and we can, up till that point, you saw that you had six different speakers. Hareini nozir she'echod mikem nozir. This, a seventh person says, I'll be a nozir if one of you turns out to be a nozir. Hareini nozir she'ein echod mikem nozir. I'll be a nozir if none of you are a nozir. A ninth person says, Hareini nozir shekulchem nazirin. Hare kulon nazirin. In presenting the Mishnah, we made reference to nine different people. That itself is going to be the subject of the Gemara. Is it a function here of nine different people, or is this Mishnah describing nine different Nazirios, meaning one person who said all of these things, and there's reference here to nine periods of Nazirus that this one person would have to observe. The Mishnah rules that Hare Kula Nazirin, they're all bound to Nazirus. Tani Chada, one version is Tisha Nazirin, there are nine people. The Tanya Idoch, Tisha Nazirios. One person with nine Nazirus obligations. Two versions. And now the Gemara asks a question. It lasts a couple of lines. Bishlama tisha nazirin. Kagon dahavi gavri tfei. The itfis v'azubay. The case would be that there are nine people. A lot of people. That's havi gavri tfei. There are a number of people there. And they're all imposing their Nazirus on that koi, as the Mishnah described. Elo teisha nezirios l'cha gavra hechi mishkachas lo. How, in reading this Mishnah, can you account for one person with 9 nezirus obligations? Bishlamoshis mishkachas lo kidisnan. 6 of them, and you'll notice if you look carefully at our markings, how 1 through 6 were numbered in one fashion. When we got to 7 through 9, we added parentheses around the number. So 1 through 6 simply is as it is read. In other words, one person could have said each one of those points. Granted, there is, let's say, contradiction in the different points, but one person could have said all 6 of those points. Aval Tlas, namely 7 through 9, Hechi Mishkachas La. When you read 7, for example, there's a person saying, I'll be a Nazir, She'echod Mikem, one of you. So you have a second party here referring to others that were before him. So how do you have in cases 7 and 8 and 9 a reference to one person? Meaning the one original person. You can see in cases 7, 8, and 9 reference made by the speaker to others that were there. Omar Rav Sheshes. Kagon de Omar. The case of one person having 9 nezirios upon him is where one person said, Nezirus hakul olai. Let's take a look at the Tosfos here at the lower part of the Tosfos column, the last Tosfos on this perek. Kegol diyama hareini nazir unezirus hakol olai. Ro tisha b'nei odom. He saw 9 people standing there, shinifesu atzmon b'nezirim b'koi, who attached themselves to nezirus through this koi. V'yomar, and this person who is viewing the 9 people that are there, hare olai kol din nezirus kulchem. Whatever nezirus applies to you, I accept on myself. Hare yeshel av tisha sveikas nezirus. He's got 9 nezirus that he has to observe out of doubt. The emirtzi l'sakin atzmo yomar, if he wants to fix himself, meaning he wants things to work out well, that he should observe all 9 nezirios, even though they are in fact contradictory, and eventually conclude and release himself from the nezirus restrictions, he should do the following. Yomar, im yesh olai teisha nezirus choiva mutav. If I have 9 obligatory nezirios, then that's then fine. V'im lav harei olai teisha nezirus nedava. Then I'm going to observe the 9 nezirios anyway, but through nedava, through out of voluntary intention. So with this scenario that Rav Sheshes describes, we can maintain the version of teisha nezirios, one person having 9 nezirus obligations in the context of the nezirus that was attached or made dependent on the koi. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.